Every month we get to meet people whose individual stories are intertwined with the story of the region. Stories of Southern Oregon are compiled by Maureen Flanagan Battistella for the Southern Oregon Digital Archive, SODA, at the Hannon Library at Southern Oregon University. We have now said the required number of times we can say Southern Oregon today. This month, Maureen is back with Marty Daniels Jr., who comes to talk about not just himself, but the people in his line of work and the organization they share. That is the Jackson County Stockmen's Association, representing ranchers large and small across the county. Marty Daniels Jr., welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate that.
We were just trying to suss out, and we don't have a hard figure here about the birth date of the Stockmen's Association, but safe to say it goes back at least 2-3 generations.
Absolutely. Decades, yes.
And it changed its name not terribly long ago, you were saying?
It used to be the Jackson County Cattlemen's Association, and back in the 90s, they changed it to the Jackson County Stockmen's Association to incorporate other livestock industries in the area, such as sheep and things like that.
All right, so more than just the beef business then.
Absolutely.
So what was it set up to do? I mean, what's the general function of the Stockmen's Association?
It's just to help the producers in the area know what's going on in the state. You know, we're a sister of the Oregon Cattlemen's Association, which we help do anything that has to do with the livestock industry, whether it be animal husbandry or, keeping up on the House bills with the legislation, so on and so forth, just trying to keep the cattle industry alive in the area.
What kinds of things do you do for members, particularly the smaller ones, that they might not be able to do by themselves without the association?
So one of the large things we do is our annual work day. We have a spring and a fall work day. We partner with the Cow Creek Tribe, K-Bar Ranches, and they have a facility out in Central Point that we allow the members to come and work their cattle. A lot of these small producers don't have the means to work their cattle like the bigger producers do. It takes a squeeze chute in an alleyway and sorting facilities and such, and we bring a vet in, and we give the other members an opportunity to work their cattle, see a vet, not have to pay the premiums to have the vet come directly to them and take care of them the way they need to be taken care of. That's probably the biggest thing that me and Randy take care of. And the rest of it is just small stuff. We have an annual dinner and meetings. We have monthly meetings that we talk about what's going on in the industry and what's going on with the state level. And then we have our annual picnic, which is actually coming this Sunday, the 18th, at the Old Elks Picnic Grounds, which is Jim Belushi's place.
Going to have beef there?
Absolutely. It's a nice tri-tip.
Tri-tip. It's always tri-tip, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Tri-tip or New York steaks. So that's probably the 200-foot level of what we do.
So. You do a lot of work with kids, though, too, don't you?
Absolutely. I mean, this is all about the kids in our eyes. We're trying to raise good, productive, human beings to help bring this generation on. And they may not stay in the cattle industry, but they maybe help with another facet that helps take care of the cattle industry. Yep. And not necessarily the cattle industry, but just any livestock in general industry.
You mentioned the work day, and Maureen Flanagan Battistella just recently put a video up on YouTube that we'll make sure we link to at jeffexchange.org of the spring work day from April this year. And there's a lot going on there. You mentioned the squeeze chute. So this is it looks like a hydraulic press where basically you get to capture the animal so they can't move and you can take care of things for them.
Right. Exactly. So that's a pretty high-end facility, not really the typical for the smaller producer. Most of them are manual squeeze chutes that you have levers that you pull by hand and squeeze
Armstrong
the cattle down.
Chutes, you could call them.
Exactly. Oh, but same philosophy at the end of the day, and allows us to capture them and give them shots or take care of an abscess or preg check them. The bulls will semen test and trick test and things like that.
So for the people who don't know ranching, I mean, it does involve more than just, having your baby calf and then go out there and just eat grass and we'll see you in a couple of years. It's much more complicated than that.
Well, it depends on the level of how you want to get into it. But there's, there's the cow-calf operation, there's the seed stock operation, and then there's also the producers who are producing the animals for people that are just trying to have a herd for, like I say, a cow-calf operation. Lots of people produce just bulls. So they will have a cow-calf operation, but at the end of the day, they're trying to raise those bulls up to be a marketable product for the people that need a bull to inseminate their cattle. Seed stock operation is just feeder operation, will come in and buy the weaned calves, and they'll raise them up to around the 900-pound range, and then they'll send them to a feedlot to be brought up to around the 1,350, 1,400-pound range to be then processed and butchered for the end producer.
Where does that happen for us, for you?
There's not a local market around here like there used to be. The ones that I typically sell will go up to Simplot Feedlot up in Washington, in Pasco, Washington. We have a buyer here in town. The auction yard is no longer. There used to be an auction yard on the corner of Table Rock. Table Rock and Vilas. That's been gone for many, many years. And a family who's deep in the heritage of the area, the Andersons, run Rick Anderson, put together Anderson Livestock, and they offer once a week for people to bring in their animals and sell, whether they're an older cow that's just, you know, past its prime, or an old bull, or even younger cattle. And then they send most of everything they sell to Simplot up in Washington. So, and that's where they're processed. But there's lots of other processing facilities, California, Washington, wherever. Mm-hmm. We just don't have any local anymore.
Mm-hmm. What's the general status of the livestock business? I mean, particularly when I see so many bits of open space being taken up with hemp now, I just wonder what kind of land is still left for livestock operations, and what the trend is, particularly as the whole generation of farmers and ranchers begins to age out.
I will tell you, it's getting very tough. The hemp industry is paying premium dollar for the acreage, and the cattle industry can't afford the cost per acre that the hemp can afford, and so they are disappearing. The last record I heard was 54,000 acres in the state of Oregon is under hemp now. That's a lot of land that used to be either just pasture land or hay land,
right.
And so we're doing more, or you know, the same amount with less ground. And what in turn is happening is people are just getting rid of it, getting rid of their animals, and more animals are going to slaughter, and they're not keeping the small herds. And so the person that had, you know, 10 acres and had 10 cows probably sold those cows and leased to the hemp guy. And so they're just not in the industry anymore at all. So they flooded the market, and that's part of the reason I think the prices are down the way they are right now.
I was going to ask you if there was a benefit to the consumer, but it's certainly not a benefit to the producers like you.
No, not by any means. But I think it's going to impact us terribly after a while, because we're going to – that influx is going to come in, it's going to disappear, and then we're going to have to try to feed the country, and we don't have the livestock head account that we used to have. The hay costs are going to go up higher and higher and higher because the ground isn't being produced for hay, so we still have to feed the cattle in the winter or ship them to an area where the ground produces all year round. A lot of people send their cattle to California in the winter, and those grounds are getting, you know, tied up, and they don't have the land to produce the grass that they need to handle the amount of head they need.
Is there a general squeezing on agricultural land even without the hemp production, just because people are moving out into the country and you get, you know, cities extending outward?
Well, I mean, I don't know that we see it as much here, but sure. Close to where I live, the Eagle Point Golf Course used to all be farmland, and that whole area is a housing area and a golf course. So it doesn't seem like much when 500 acres gets bought up and turns into houses, but it does affect after time. I mean, there's still the opportunity to produce more land that wasn't producible before, but it's definitely coming. It's not as easy as it used to be.
This is Stories of Southern Oregon on the Jefferson Exchange. Marty Daniels, Jr. is the president of the Jackson County Stockmen's Association. Maureen Flanagan Battistella back to do her accustomed role. She puts together Stories of Southern Oregon. Randy Wolf is with us as well, the vice president of the JCSA, and another role we'll talk about in just a moment. Questions, comments for our guests? Welcome on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Even without hemp, I mean, what's going on with people wanting to stay in the business, get into the business, get their kids in the business, in ranching in particular?
Well, I mean, it's a tough thing. Because the older generation, their kids, they got into the business, and some of their kids, the second generation's kids, are getting into the business, but it's farther and fewer between. You know, the emphasis on going to college, coming back and running the family ranch is not as strong as it used to be. It's go to college and then go find a job behind a desk somewhere, you know, not work out in the fields and produce hay or cattle or whatever. So the emphasis isn't there to push the kids to do it anymore. It's still happening. It's just not happening as much as it used to.
Of the people who do work ranches, do some of them have other jobs as well?
You know, the average cattle producer in the state of Oregon is 50 animals or less.
Mm-hmm.
And so I will say the 95% of those 50 animals are left have an outside job. I, in the industry, have always had an outside job. I have never lived completely off my livestock. And we've cut hay, raised cows, we've had a feeder operation, and I've always had an outside job.
So in the busy season at the ranch, how many hours are you spending between day job and ranch?
Oh, that can be tough, but, you know, an 80, 100 hour a week, mm-hmm. pretty easy.
That's a big one.
But even if I wasn't working at the day job, I'd probably still spend that 80 or 100 hours a week out there just because you wouldn't have – I hire help to keep the things going. I wouldn't have that help because I would be doing it.
Are there seasonal cycles in the ranching business, in your ranching life?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So, I mean – if you're a cow-calf operation, take me, we're breeding in the fall. We're trying to get the animals ready to get pregnant again. They're, at that point in time, we're working the cattle and we're getting the calves ready. We're castrating calves and Bangs vaccinating the heifers. And then we're putting them out to pasture. But then as soon as we get into the pasture, then we have to irrigate the pasture to keep the pasture green, fertilize it, keep it going. If we are in a hay operation like Randy has, he's getting ready to start cutting hay, and so he's getting busy into cutting hay. The cattle might be off feed, and they're out in the pasture, but we're cutting hay, getting ready for the next winter, for setting up the barn, getting it full. And then we'll, in the spring, and I just said that completely backwards, I'm sorry. In the spring, we'll do that. In the fall, then we're going to bring the calves in. We're going to wean them off, send them to market. We'll send them off to a person who's going to have a feeder operation to fatten them up and get them to that 900-pound range. So then we're working them again. We're preg checking cows, making sure the cows are pregnant to go into the winter. We're, like I said, getting the barns ready for that.
So it's pretty steady all year round. It's just that the tasks change.
The tasks change, yeah. I mean, if you're doing it in a small operation and you're trying to take care of it all yourself, I would say it stays steady all year round. Mm-hmm. There's different tasks that probably accelerate the days some, but you're always busy. You know, in calving season, you're always busy.
But I noticed that you, when you said you got it backwards, it's just because you're always aware of where you are on the calendar. You know it's the middle of August, and you know what the next step is, right?
Yep, yeah. So we're trying to stretch every drop of water we can right now to keep the pastures green, to keep the cattle on pasture until we bring them in for the fall working, and then we'll put them in the feedlot, or I put them in a feedlot to calve out and
I wondered how different the spring workday was from the fall workday. You have two a year. And we saw a lot of pregnancy checks, that whole arm into the anus.
Yeah,
was
that's quite
amazing.
A shot, by the way. I was on a different tab on my computer. Yeah.
I never saw that before. It was amazing.
So it depends on the season that you're pregnant, you're going to calve. So that will happen pretty prevalent in both work days.
Okay.
For me, that's going to happen more so in this fall because they've been out with the bull. We want them to be pregnant, so we're going to check our cattle this time of year. The reason we had some there at spring work day is because cows hadn't calved yet. So we want to make sure that they're still pregnant. They didn't have an issue and slough their calf that we didn't see. So we wanted to make sure. That's why you saw my excitement that day.
Yes.
When one of those was my son's getting preg tested. And so it was a good deal. We're going to get a calf out of her.
Yes, like cheering every time they're pregnant.
She needs to produce and pay for herself, and that's how she does. She produces a calf. She then pays for herself and keeps herself on the ranch. If she doesn't have a calf, then the alternative is she goes down the road.
Down the road, she goes to slaughter, goes to market.
Amber.
Well, she goes down the road for me. She may not go to slaughter, okay, but she's not going to be on our ranch anymore because she needs to bring a paycheck in. She's going to bring a paycheck in either with her calf that she produces or herself.
All right. So an animal's got to pull their weight.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Randy, I want to ask you about the hay part of things because I'm just curious to know like how much hay you have to put up over the course of a season to make sure that you got your cattle covered. Is there a ratio of like bales per head or something?
Well, that's totally going to depend on the environment that the cattle are in. If you have them in an environment where they're spread out and they can get some picking, you're going to feed a lot less hay. If they're combined in a feedlot where it's just strictly dirt, yeah, you're going to have to feed that cow approximately 40 pounds a day of good hay.
Mm-hmm.
So you just got to figure out.
And that's a small bale, isn't it, 40 pounds?
Well, most bales are bigger than 40 pounds, but that's about how much that the cow needs to eat a day.
Mm-hmm. So you're going to do your math and figure out you have 100 head to feed. You know, you're going to feed 4,000 pounds of hay.
That's a lot of hay.
So it just depends on how many you're feeding and how much hay you're going to feed.
Now, I noticed from the video that Maureen put together of the spring workday that there was at least one producer who just had one head.
Mm-hmm. So as I say, the average producer has 50 head or less. Mm-hmm. We, as an association, don't you don't have to have a certain amount to be part of the group. And we encourage that one or two head person to bring them to that workday, because those are the people that don't have the facilities to take care of their cattle. We're big on shots. We want to make sure that the cattle are healthy. We want to do good animal husbandry. And so those people that don't have those facilities, that's why we offer this. Mm-hmm. Our bigger producers, they all have squeeze chutes. They have the corrals. They have the means to do this themselves.
Like the K-Bar has their own, don't they?
Well, we were at K-Bar.
You're at K-Bar.
So they have many facilities. Yeah. Yeah. That's their biggest facility on the ranch, but they have other spots on the ranch because the ranch is so big. It's not worth bringing the cattle across 1,700 acres to work them there. Mm-hmm. So they'll have other facilities around the ranch. I have a small place that I lease 250 acres, and it has two facilities on that place. But I have the means, they don't, so that's why we put that together.
Yeah, K-Bar Ranch is a historic ranch, isn't it? It
used to be called Rogue River Ranch. Mm-hmm. I don't remember that Randy might be able to speak to the old owner
Ginger
of the
Rogers?
Ranch.
But the Cow Creek Band of Umpqua Indians bought the ranch, and that became K-Bar.
Mm-hmm. Correct. They have K-Bar ranches up in Roseburg already, and this is just an extension of the ranches out of Roseburg.
So for those of you who stay in the business, and granted, we're talking some pretty small stuff here, like in a 1 to 10 head of cattle, what's the motivation? I mean, is it all love? I mean, is this something you just can't imagine not doing?
Well, no, I can't imagine not doing it some days. And I have completely got out of the industry. I sold all my cows once before, and my son started to get old enough to where he could get into it, and he's the one that got me back into it. We just ran feeders in the fall. And the spring and the summer, and then we sold them in the fall. I made a comment earlier, and I'll mess this comment up, but in my world, this is me, I raise cattle. We have cattle to raise our kids. We don't have kids to raise our cattle. So to me, it's all about my kid, my son. You know, he's 17. He loves it. He lives and breathes cattle 24/7. He likes to show in FFA and 4-H. He's heavy into the 4-H program and also the FFA program. He goes to Eagle Point High School, and he is in the judging group there. So they go to judging contests all summer. They just got back from Roseburg. They're going to Grants Pass this week to the fair, to the judging contest, and they're going to State Fair next week.
Is he a senior this year?
He's going to be a junior this year.
All right. So the cattle business, you're saying, is hereditary. You got it from your son or got back into it from your
son. I got back into it from my son. When I originally got into it, I did 4-H when I was in high school, and I loved it. My dad always had a cow or two, so we were the ones that would have been helped by the association when we were young. We always had one or two, three, four head. And so I liked it. I was around it. I lived it. But then I decided to get back into it for tax reasons. It definitely helps to have a farm. It changes your tax structure.
Oh, boy, I imagine
and
it
so,
does.
That was the reason I got back into it. Mm-hmm. And then I liked it and loved it. And then my son got into it. He's into it strictly for the love.
All right. Marty Daniels, Jr., president of the Jackson County Stockmen's Association. Thanks for joining us on this month's edition of Stories of Southern Oregon.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
Thanks to Maureen Flanagan Battistella for bringing him in. Randy Wolf, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you, Jeff.